center, or at least the start of my story, came to me not too long ago when I was sitting on the subway, talking to my wife on the phone about something or other, and noticing that there was a guy staring at me, scruffy-looking guy, the kind of guy I figured it was probably going to hit me up for some money, looking for a touch. Grizzled gray hair and a scruffy beard and cut-off jeans, and I didn't know what to make of him. I was sitting here thinking, why is this guy staring at me? And I hung up the phone, stopped talking to my wife, and he looked at me and said, "I thought it was you. I recognized the voice." And I realized, what is he talking about? He said, you're on the radio. You're on TV. I know you. And I just wanted to say, I love your work. I learned so much. And I just want to say hello and thank you. And I realized at that moment something that it's taken me so many years to learn, that I'm not as alien and weird and out of it as I sometimes think, that I have found here in Boston a home, a community where I am welcomed and where I don't have to feel as though I'm an alien and an outsider, even though that's how I arrived here, as an exile, fleeing as fast as I could from a failed marriage and a collapsed job. I was at the Detroit Free Press back in 1995, which was actually a very interesting place to be. For one thing, of course, this was back in the days when newspapers actually made money. I mean, it was amazing. They made a profit. Unfortunately, we made the mistake of asking to share some of it, and they objected. So there was a strike, and it didn't quite work out. But while I was there, 1995 was a seminal year, actually. It was at that year that the internet really began to take off. That's the year Netscape went public, and they privatized this network in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which was at the backbone of the internet. And I went to my editors and I said, we need to start covering this. We need to start writing about it. And so I became the Free Press's technology reporter and had the time of my life. Mr. Ito, I spent more than a few occasions talking to Stanford Ovshinsky over at the company we were talking about, energy conversion devices. Wonderful experience. And so when that crisis happened and I realized that the Detroit Free Press was no longer the place for me because I was not going to cross the picket line, I started casting about looking for another job, and somehow an opportunity opened up here in Boston. And of course, I just knew. This is where it all began. This is where it started. This is the very birthplace of so many of the technologies I wanted to write about. And I figured, if I'm going to be an exile, I'm going to be an exile there. I did not expect to find love. I did not expect to find companionship or friendship. I expected to find MIT and Harvard and, well, those of you who are old enough to remember, I expected to find Digital Equipment Corporation. And, well, we all know how that worked out. And I did find a great deal of that. This was back in the day when it seemed as though Boston was going to become as competitive in these fields as Silicon Valley. That didn't quite work out, and yet we still had so many of the greatest thinkers, so many of the greatest innovators, and I got to meet them. And then the ones who weren't based here kept passing through because they had to be in Boston. Bill Gates and Andy Grove, who back in the day was running Intel, and who is, by the way, perhaps the most scary smart human being I've ever met in my life, or the wonderful cynicism of people like Scott McNeely, who founded Sun Microsystems. People like that, I was in the midst of them, and I got to talk to them and learn from them, and it was a magnificent experience. And yet, all the while, I knew this somehow wasn't quite enough. It was not enough. I was still not really at home. Here I am, some guy with an economics degree who didn't really understand a lot of what I was writing about, and people, I thought, were merely putting up with me, patronizing me. I guess it was my imagination. I worked day in, day out, constantly writing by day and interviewing by day, going home and playing computer games by night, endless rounds of computer games. Yes, I was one of those people. But going to church on Sundays, in much the same way that I became a journalist in the first place. Going to church and being a journalist were really somehow connected in my mind, because both of them were an attempt to become human. I became a journalist in large part because I wanted to be human. It was an attempt to get out of the cage that I built for myself. I felt I had to reach out to the rest of the world, and this would be a career that would basically force me to do it. And it did work to a limited extent. The same thing about church. I was a Christian believer, still am, and I knew you could not be a Christian alone. I had to find a church. I found People's Baptist Church. 830 Tremont, if you want to drop in. 210 years old, one of the oldest black churches in America, as a matter of fact, built by freed slaves and freedmen. Wonderful place. But everybody there knew there was something wrong. Much as I loved to be there and sing the hymns and say the prayers, nevertheless, people thought I was cold and distant and unfeeling. And there was a lot of truth to that. My pastor thought there was really something wrong. And I think there was too. And I didn't realize how much wrong there was until about 10 years ago when I was at a hotel in Brookline and I met Miss Zaire of 1981. Miss Zaire of 1981, who herself was an exile, who had come fleeing to Congo from the terror of death that awaited her in her native land. I mean, in her native land, she had been something that I wasn't. I grew up a poor kid. My parents were like basically sharecroppers from the deep south, you know, lucky to have $2 to rub together. She lived in an affluent family in Congo. She went to a school when she learned five languages and studied Greek and Latin and traveled around the world and became a manager at one of the largest hotels in Congo. And then she had to flee as a refugee. And she stumbled across me, a refugee from Detroit, which was just about as bad. And and we came together and came to love each other and came to marry each other. And it was like being reintroduced to a part of humanity that I never really had before, that had, even in a previous marriage, not really fully taken hold of me. And she took hold of me in other ways, too. I mean, first of all, she planned the wedding. It was a wonderful affair. And in the process, she introduced me to the whole Congolese community here in Boston. There is a community of hundreds of Congolese who live here, many of them refugees. And I came to know them as they helped put together our wedding. And then my wife, interested in doing more than what she was doing at her job, she's an admin at MIT, decided that she wanted to do wedding planning and wedding photography. But, you know, there's this funny thing about doing photography. You have to learn how to work the camera. And, you know, I'm one of these technology guys, and so you know the rule. We all say RTFM. I'm not going to tell you what it stands for. And whenever somebody doesn't know how to do things, you say, come on, read the manual. She didn't want to be bothered. So that was my job. She focused on working to achieve the beauty of the effects she was trying to do at these wedding events and at the fashion shows that she also shot. And she said, you've got to read the manuals. You've got to show me how the cameras work. You've got to teach me this stuff. And so all the technology-friendly brain that I had was turned onto a different kind of problem, learning how to take f-stops and ISO readings and all the other technical minutiae of cameras and photography and turn it into beauty, into capturing the essence of a moment, into capturing something that would convey meaning and feeling to other people when they saw it. And it gave me a sense of direction. It gave me a connection to the technologies that I'd written about that I'd never previously had, that drew me into it in a way that was new to me, that made it more human, that made it more personal. And along the way, I got to see so much of the culture of this area. I spent so many days, so many nights shooting weddings of people from Congo and Haiti. I especially loved the Greek Orthodox wedding we did. For some strange reason, if you were doing a Greek Orthodox wedding, you put the wedding cake onto plates, then you go out onto the dance floor and you throw the plates onto the dance floor, cake and all, and then dance through the smeary cake all over the floor. I don't know why the Greeks do it. I mean, it didn't seem to me they were drinking any more than any of the other weddings I saw, but this was something they insisted on doing. Well, we even shot a bat mitzvah once, something that was totally new to me, but absolutely fascinating, and it showed me how much of the world I had been cutting myself off from and how much wonder and delight and pleasure there was in the world. And I got to see it through the eyes of my wife. Also along the way, I got to learn about the joys of fashion photography. Absolutely. My wife does fashion photography as well. We have the annual bikini shoot at the beach, which she insists on my going to. And it always makes me a little bit nervous because I feel, come on, I'm a Baptist. We're not supposed to do that. But she insisted I come with her because otherwise drunken people walking along the beach will interrupt as all these women in bikinis are standing around. And I said, okay, baby, I'm your husband. I'll be there for you. And it usually works out. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. It's the, well, you know, the old saying, people ask photographers for magazines like Playboy, how do you do that and not be distracted? It's easy because you are paying attention to the technique and getting everything right, and that becomes your focus. I was a little uncomfortable about it also, because in time I became a deacon at my church, and I still am. And that's been very important to me. I, by the way, asked the head of the deacon board, should I be doing this fashion photography with my wife? And he said, can I come along? So I thought, so I figure I've got their permission to do that. I have to wrap up. We're running out of time. I just want to wrap up by conveying the fact that being made a deacon played a very important role in what really changed me, because it came to me that I had to trust God more, and that being put in this city with that woman and with all the experiences that I have had is not an accident. I'm here for a reason, and that reason is to make contact with people, to go beyond the mere writing about technology, to understand the heart and soul of what lies behind everything that everyone I write about is actually doing. And I've begun to do that, and little by little become more a part of this community, more accepting of other human beings, more welcoming to the greetings that I get on subway trains and walking down the street than I ever thought I would be. Thank you very much.